Good evening. Well, my topic is, as you see, is I want to talk about the characteristics and challenges of public spaces of Kathmandu Valley towns, mostly from a sociocultural perspective. But I'll be probably talking more about characteristics than challenges. The challenges will be coming towards the end, and depending upon how I keep time, the challenges might go to the question hour. If we study history, we find that civilizations usually look at towns at crossings of thoughts, ideas, cultures, traditions, societies, economic activities, and of course roads. Where roads cross, the towns seem to come. But we have to remember that it's not just the physical crossing of roads and the buildings in it that makes a town. The town is a place where all these different thoughts, ideas, cultures come together. They have to come together in the town because they meet at the crossroads and then go through a process of assimilation. Every town survives by it's in the nature of the town itself to generate diversities. And so it tries to assimilate again and again. So this cycle perpetuates. And that cycle of assimilation and diversity creation and re-assimilation, that's what is civilization all about. And essentially, whenever any person or any society tries to do something about a town, it's usually trying to meet the demands of urban living in terms of three contexts, you can say. One is the context of heterogeneity, the multiplicity of cultures and ethnicities and economic activities that take place in the town. And the other aspect it has to deal with is the diversity. Diversity is something like the socioeconomic distance between the various elements that make up the town. So it's the nature, the multiplicity and diversity, that's what they try to deal with. And lastly, every town has to deal with the problem of density, which is the physical proximity of the elements. The people or cultures or thoughts become too close to each other, and that causes conflicts, and that's how needs to be resolved in some way. There's some problem with this screen here in the sense that the slides have got overlapped here. But essentially, we have what you can see is the town tries to in town we try to seek comfort. And basically, and discomfort is not always physical comfort. There's a lot of attempt to make a sociocultural comfort. And this is what we want to look at in this lecture. And of course, it's in the urban spaces where the generally the definition of urban space itself is the space framed by buildings in the town. I would like to look at it that way. That it is, the buildings are an essential part of any open space. That they have to form a boundary in it, and any urban open space becomes and takes that characteristic because the buildings are around. And it is in the urban space that the complexity of urban living is actually expressed. So we have spaces like this, which are a kind of open spaces or at crossings, mostly at the crossings, and they might also be along the road or other places, which are actually spaces for sociocultural play, in which the people have to be able to express their cultural, let's say cultural or social ideas of living together comfortably. And these are usually expressed in some form of symbols, and they have some meanings that are particular to particular groups. And so the same space might be seen as sociocultural is different by different groups in the society at the same time. So it's kind of interesting in that way that in the urban spaces you might be able to enjoy different fields of study depending upon which part of the society you belong or which group you belong to. So essentially, in every urban space, it tries to create an environment for the expression of cultural ideas, and it also tries to project a possibility of being recognized by others, because this is a two-way street. Urban space is not used by individuals, it's used by at least two persons. So it's a social use. And when two persons are concerned, I think the rule of using the space has to be known to the other guy also. So this becomes the central aspects of arranging an open space. So essentially you can see that urban spaces are not just physical architectural spaces or environmental spaces. It becomes very much of a social cultural space, as you can see here. And basically when you look at it, how the people interact, you can think that the basic social unit anywhere is of course the family, and the realm of interaction of the family is what I call the private space. Okay, any realm of interaction between socially distant people, I'll say that acts in the public space, that happens in the public space. So two socially distant people are not interacting in a private space. That's the definition for me. So it's a public space means a place where distant people meet. And the way we do it in a city is that because it has a problem of heterogeneity, it tries to develop some kind of homogeneity in it. So the way the society is make it to smaller groups, so that each group becomes some kind of a homogeneous unit in some way. So how that group is organized, it might be organized as, oh, we all have a similar idea, or we all work in a similar place, or we all have let's say similar problems in life, or somewhere. Anyway, there are some homogenizing characteristics that will be used to form a group, and so these groups come to seek comfort in the open spaces. So the open spaces also to be used itself, they need a culture. Culture meaning let's say agreed state of ways of living that the group has to agree to itself. And this is in traditional societies, of course, it builds over time, so it's already there in a kind of a it is present in the actors themselves. So these cultural characteristics of a place is actually the rules of coming together, how the people come together, and how they are supposed to live their life together. There are rules, that rules have to be obeyed. If the rules are not obeyed, then it doesn't become a social space. Okay, and essentially through these, the symbols, values, or whatever we put through these elements that we put there, or some activities that we assign to a space, from there we seek some sort of coherence among ourselves, and then we become a society there. And depending upon where we belong in the society, we express a different kind of, different level of ownership. Some feel closer to a place than others, and this is because of the value symbols and the processes that are linked to us. So all this, if we try to make index is ownership, belongingness, and uses, that can give us the index of urbanism itself. What you might call a society which has got a very complex set of ownership, belongingness, and uses happening in the same place, I would think is a society which is very much urban and has a way of living in urban spaces. So usually in Kathmandu, the Newar society, which has been living here, which has been crucial in forming these spaces, I think their urbanism is basically derived from three organizing systems. They're organizing themselves in the group using three different systems. And one is the organizing system of the society itself. So it's a social organization. They have a particular way of organizing their society so that and the other organizing system they use is the organization of land and space. So it's like a socio-spatial organization. It's not just a social organization. Then it is followed by a socio-spatial organization, and they have a third set of organizing system, which is a kind of festive activities, which are actually socio-spatial and cultural organizing system. So all these three things come together in this third set of organization. And it is using these, it is the development of these organizing systems in the society, or of the land and space, and of the festivities that makes the urban spaces of Kathmandu very unique because of all these three things. And so it's not just one aspect. So if you go and look at some open spaces, like street is, as far as I'm concerned, street is almost an open space also, because that's where some cultural activities take place. and you will see when this kind of cultural activity takes place, all the three kinds of organizing systems and the let's say structure set up by the organizing system actually start operating in the on the ground there. So there is a social organizing system working here. The family and clans interact in a certain way, and there is this spatial organization as to where this is going to happen and how it is going to happen in a particular place. Those are kind of spelled there, and then there is of course the rule of doing it as to how it is to be performed or what are the sequence of things, who performs it and how that is timed. All these things are very put in a complex package in the open space, in which only the members of that culture are able to recognize immediately, because cultural processes are recognized by the people from within, and it is kind of difficult to understand that cultural process or rules of living from outside. And so study of culture becomes kind of a difficult thing to do. But this is what I have been able to understand from outside, let me say. Okay, if you look at the organizing principles for the society, basically they have been organized for a community living. So there is a great sense of community. So even in the family level, you have the joint family system where a number of generations of people live together, and there is a kind of linked by a certain, maybe the same kitchen or those kind of attitudes. So this often, this is a monocase situation, the family organization. And that is progressively kind of increases in size or develop in terms of clan. So there are various levels of clan. They can be a very small group, just maybe the Voce is just a three generation kind of thing, and then if you go to a shopping or cooking, these go to five or seven generations that become very, very large. But what is interesting about this is they are linked to the neighborhood. It's not that they become large and they spread all over the town or all over the country. That's not it. It is still a kind of spatially hooked, limited there. So all these monocase situations happen at the scale of the neighborhood. And in some cases, in the case of because the societies have been developing over time, and in modern, in recent times, you'll find that these have gone beyond the neighborhood. But essentially, in earlier days, I think it was limited to the neighborhood. And then the activities of this clan were usually put through the Bhuti, and Bhuti was kind of a system which institutionalized the social grouping system or social clan system, whatever they had. So once you go outside the neighborhood, then it is a multi-caste and multi-religious kind of a situation. So it is the family and the clan formation is in a monocaste kind of situation. It's just one group that is there. But when the festivities happen, or when things happen and beyond the neighborhood, then it happens with the participation of many caste groups, and they even come from different religious groups though. So this kind of multi-caste and multi-religious situation occurs in markets, cities, nation and the valley here, because at one time I think these were three nations, more than three nations within the valley. So this society basically, in terms of multi-caste groups, the whole thing was kind of developed based on interactive interrelationship between monocaste sociocultural groups. So this is not a multi-caste social cultural group is not coming together, as far as I could see. All the Gujis, for example, are all monocaste groups, and all their kin systems are also based on monocastes. So in the city, what we find is the spaces that have kind of matched this expanding social organization, as you can see, from the family to the larger clan, then beyond the clan to the multi-caste units. So these have resulted into a number of spaces in the urban areas which are almost hierarchical, and these are laid along some of the streets. Starting from the house, you can think of the urban spaces of Kathmandu, let's say, starting from the house of a person, and then you go to the Darbar Square, and along the way you will get this series of spaces which are going to take you from the individual space, the private space, to the Darbar Square, which is a national space and which is a very public space of some sort. And these are guided by a set of rules, unwritten rules that are socially set, culturally agreed, and so there is a, what you might call, there is a kind of a graded publicness that is there. The privateness I don't want to worry about. There is a graded publicness in the sense that to use a public space you have to be able to behave in such a way that you give due respect to the other person, and also enable the other person to act on that space, that it is not your own space alone. You have a right to act on it, but others also have a right to act on it. So this this kind of situation, so in the national space, there will be so many trying to act in the same space, and so the publicness becomes very high. So I think there is a kind of a gradient from publicness, starting from the house and the space in front of the house to the royal palace and the space in front of the royal palace, and this change you can study. And basically there is this gradation comes about because of there is a differing territorial identities, ownerships and patronage. So if you identify with some place, you might be a patron of that place also. So these are combined together to develop the gradedness. And you can see that how much of the community oriented the society is looking at the house design itself. If you look at the house, you can see, this is not a very good slide, but you can see on one side, on the roadside, the window is kind of facing down on the street. And this is a direct statement of the relationship between the living room of this family and the street. So this is a living room is probably the space in the house which has got some publicness in it, in the sense that you are meeting, all the three generations are meeting there. So you are so there is some kind of a wider interaction involved there. But the second stage for it is to look out onto the street, and it's amazing that someone living in a sitting in a living room enjoys looking at the street, which is a very public street. So it relates in some way, because in the street you find your neighborhood or someone who is closer, who is somehow has a meaning to you in your life within the living room itself. So you can see that here when you look at the left side of the other side of the house, the window is actually not inclined towards the courtyard. It is just straight, and so the intention to view the courtyard is not so much there. But if you come down, you will see there is a dalan there, which is a dalan is kind of a semi-open space, and it has a there is a need in this design. The family has a need to have a closed space and a semi-open space before going to the open space. So that's the kind of a gradation there. And as the space becomes open, not only the environment comes alive for you, but also the other, let's say, publicness issues also start arriving, because others can see what you do there. So these are some ways of you can look at the urban space itself. So what we find when you look at the newer towns of Kathmandu is the formation of the neighborhoods. Neighborhood is an attempt to homogenize the place. Because if you read history, we find that in the 16th, 15th century, the Jayasthidimala reorganized this society. And while reorganizing, one of the things that he did that we certainly know is he increased the number of jat-based groups. That means what he should have also done is, incidentally, achieved that is also to make a group size smaller than what was existing at that time. Because before that, the whole society was just divided into 18 caste groups, and then he redivided that into 82 caste groups or 64 caste groups, depending upon which document you read. Anyway, it increased that and then reduced the size to 2,000 to 5,000 persons group, and a size which is probably very good for social interaction and creating a homogeneity within the neighborhood. And what they did is they always put the same jat in the same neighborhood. Same jat meaning the people who did the same job, same work, okay, not anything else. It was not the same religion. You didn't have to have the same religion to live in the same neighborhood. You could have different religions, but you had to do the same work. And so that is the measure of homogeneity was on the work side. Okay, so at that time, maybe my thinking is they made 12 tolls, 24 tolls, so 24 neighborhoods. still they had 84 cases. Whoa, so why only 24 neighborhoods? I think there are only 24 neighborhoods, though some historians will tell you there were 32 neighborhoods or there were more like that. But I don't believe, I think there are all 24 neighborhoods, and for some reason they decided there will be 23 major neighborhoods and one neighborhood was for the royal neighborhood, more or less, royal palace area. But all these plant groups living in the neighborhood, they were firmly tied to space. They could not move out. And actually, there was so little mobility of the clan group from the neighborhood of the space that they occupied that you were supposed to nurture and nurse that space. So it was your own space. You knew you were going to finish your life there, and you knew your grandchildren are also going to be using be there. So there was a very good reason to kind of make it, improve it all the time, make it more lively, because you knew that people, yourself and your children, are going to be there all the time. So that might be the main reason the nature of the society which fixed the social group into a space that led to this kind of very beautiful let's say attachment to the space, and then urge to do something about it and create some even beautiful thing in a place. You want to make it beautiful if you are going to enjoy it yourself, and everyone is selfish in the end. So this is what they did. I think the society was getting very complex, so we have got all these red triangles and red circles or blue triangles coming together, and these are some of the organizing principles that we know that exist. We can do it along a line or make it into a melting pot or a rainbow arrangement or things like that. But what Nepalese did was the last one, which is the neighborhood pattern. That is, you make them into tiles kind of thing. Tiles with the same characteristics together. So they made 24 tiles out of the town, and each tile was homogeneous by itself, and so it offered them a lot of comfort there. So as you walk onto the street, you find that as you come out of the house, there is a little stone kept in front of your house, which is supposed to define the point of departure for yourselves, and which is supposed to tell you, I think, that you are in a public space. And so you go around it, and I always see this great idea of going around something is a great homogenizing principle, that when you go around, your direction is neutralized. You are going east, west, north, south. And so you might have some kind of objective aim there, of a direction, but then you come to a turning or in front of your house, you go around something, then your motion is neutralized. And so you can think of like they were not only homogenizing neighborhoods, homogeneous neighborhoods, they were also homogenizing places in the movements also. So there were these stones on the streets which were actually taking you around. And when you go around, I think it's a very great way of homogenization, as even the modern science has discovered that if you have all cars trying to hit each other, you send them through a traffic circle. So the second organization that happens here is the land and the space organization. And basically the social organization is linked to land and space here. And the linkage is on several levels. The individual and the house, there is a very strong linkage. We say that Newar is a person with a very firm foot on the ground, that if he doesn't have a foot in the ground, he feels kind of ground, out of place. So that's why they divide that, even the house with 2 feet width, they will just do it. If it's a 4 feet house, you just make two houses for two brothers, because the having a foot on the ground is so important. So that is the that is the objective linkage in terms of the space itself. Beyond the house also, the individual is also linked to the land in many other ways, because one of the simple way that you link yourself is that the Newar lifestyle is very much of a outdoor oriented lifestyle. And as a result, there is a linkage with the open space right away. And it is not a lifestyle which is lived indoors. And this might have been a result of circumstances, like being an agricultural population. They had to go to the farms very early in the morning. And maybe when they urbanized and they were doing tertiary, secondary activities also, this pattern stuck on. And but the pattern also led to the development of individuals' relations with different spaces or in the town itself. And I already talked about the relationship of the clan with the neighborhood, that they are tied with the clan, or the neighborhood is tied, and the clan is also tied to the neighborhood commons. In every neighborhood there will be some common spaces, particularly the common spaces were assigned because there were some activities that they did as a jat that needed some space. So a potter needed a pottery square. So this kind of, you know, the spaces that you needed for your agricultural activity or other things, these were provided. And that, there was a direct kind of identification with that common space also. There is also the sense of community ownership of land, which is here, and which is there, which is not there in all societies. Individual ownership of land is very common. But here in the Neva society, you also find the community ownership of land. And consequent territoriality is also there. And land is also tied to festivities in many ways. So if festivities is one of the organizing principles, and under this organizing principle also the land comes in, because the agricultural land is kept in trust for these festivals. So every festival is somehow already gets linked to the management of agricultural land, and so there is a direct identification. Of course, you could go into details as to how these guti lands are administered, and that can give you indicate some other kinds of patterns also. The guti system is very critical in kind of assuring this the socio-spatial relationship, socio-spatial linkage or socio-spatial grouping, and this institutionalizes it. The guti also bonds the society to the land and spaces, and also bonds to the acts of assembly itself. So that some activities itself are bonded, so you can't escape that activity. You have to take part in that activity, because this is just as you belong to, you are attached to the space, you are also attached to the activity in that space. The guti system itself is an interesting kind of organizing principle, because this is an institution that has a self-generating and self-coordinating agenda. Anybody doesn't have to tell the guti what to do at what time. It generates itself, and it is tied to the seasons actually. So that's why we call it nature-based. There is something happens in nature, and the agenda starts picking up, and this group gets together and start acting on it. And it's usually we have very ancient reference to these gutis, because we have in literary time this was called sojan guti, or a kind of activity or a trust that was managed by people of our own. That means maybe this is a reference to the clan itself, sojan guti. And if you want to, this society wanted to do larger activities, then it will kind of parcel that activity into several small components, and each component will be done by one guti. So a number of gutis work together. And the guti system, organizing system in terms of land, we also have to see that in Kathmandu society, although there are all kinds of caste groups and all kinds of jats there, that basically it is the farming community which determines the pattern and the nature of the festivities itself. Actually, the practice of these religious activities and festivals are very much dominated by the farming community of the Mahajans and groups like that. And that is again so the link to the agricultural land. So it is basically an agro-based organized society. In terms of space also, beyond the space there are this cultural principle of organizing around the culture is achieved by providing symbols which are assigned some values to each community group. Different values are assigned, maybe the same symbol might give different meaning to different groups there, and these are put in a neighborhood there, in any open space, and the different groups, for example, the kin group or caste groups or gutis or musical troops, they might find in the same physical space, different neighborhoods, social neighborhoods might be operating. Through this cultural organization, what any society tries to do is to try to get some kind of recognition from its citizen about how to behave in a public space. Okay. Some of these symbolic markers, as I was talking about, pika laku, or the stone in front of a house, that is a kind of a marker between the individual house and the public space there. Then there is another marker called chasa, or sometimes called chatrapal, and that is defining a larger kind of a clan unit, the boundary of a clan unit. And likewise, you might have a Ganesh in the neighborhood, maybe the Digujaya. So these are markers in the space, or elements in the space which activate different cultural organizations at different times. So, but if you are not culturally assimilated, then of course the lack of cognizance will lead to self-exclusion, that you will be out of it. You cannot be a part of that community if you do not understand or get the meaning out of the symbols. So for people who are coming from outside, in migrants, I think the slow assimilation, only assimilation can be one is slow. And if you have a very fast pace of in-migration, the assimilation will not take place. And that is because of the problem of cognizance itself. And so these lack of cognizance also inhibits interculturation. So if you give sufficient time, then there is interculturation. So because the Newars themselves had a lot of time, there is a lot of accommodation between neighborhoods. Although they were divided as clan units between neighborhoods, but over the years the accommodation between neighborhoods had already developed. So if you go to these spaces, you will find symbols like this, which might not have much meaning to many of us. It just might look like a picture, but to the people who are within a certain culturally associated group, this will mean something, and this will mean something got to be done at a certain time and in a certain way also. So festivities are, and activities are another way of organizing a cultural organization there. So this activity brings together individuals, families, communities, all of them in an area belonging to area, neighborhood, node, etc. And it uses the networks of gods and goddesses, you can say, to socialize and then remain socialized. So that's the whole idea of living in a town. I think you don't want your neighbor to be anonymous to you after some time, so you have to keep nurturing that relationship. So, and if you have to do a larger festival, then a number of goodies come together and share, take a share of things there. And I have found amazing situations in which there are even single persons goodies which are just represented by one person, and he is able to know what he is supposed to do at what time, and he simply waits for his time and does it and feels good in being able to do something that was somehow told to him that he should do. And the pride is in doing something so that everyone is able to enjoy the full thing. So this kind of organizing principles are also there. So festivals actually total as a multi-clan and multi-activity chains there. And so these are kind of good examples of multiculturalism. So cultures, these festivals also, festivals and activities mediate your culture through time and space. So there are many symbols in this space which refer to your daily cycle of activities. There might be other symbols that refer to fortnightly cycles. And in this society, there are monthly cycles, there are yearly cycles, there are 4-yearly cycles, there are 12-yearly cycles, and somehow after 12 years, you remember that you've got to do something. And I don't know how the 12-yearly and 4-yearly and 12-yearly cycle actually come into effect, because there might be some indicators in nature which can tell you which the 12th year is. Of course, today you can always count the number of years and say 2012 is the 12th year after 2000, that's easy. But if you have to try to read it from nature, then you have to work out your system there. And I think this society probably worked out. I don't know what system they were using here. So in doing in very, very big festivals like this, this is one of the festivals that happens in Haridong, and we can see that apart from the small one person Guti who was just entrusted to warm the chariot of the God when it gets cold. So he just waits for the moment for the chariot to feel cold, and then he lights up his firewood to make it better. Maybe this is a memory of some ancient times, but the whole thing for us to remember is that the societies have thought it necessary to remember that and do it over and over again, and because that defined their life in a better way, and it was a community life they were talking of. So I still have 10 minutes. Okay, I think I'll make it. So with this we have a kind of a time and space hierarchy there. But if you look at the, if you want to look at the hierarchy, how it happens, I just give some examples here, like from the family courtyard to the street to the party. Now I say one kind of hierarchy is there. So party you can see is a kind of a clan level socializing space. It's a particularly a space for male socialization. And then you have a well also, which is family courtyard street to the well, and that. I think it was the female socializing space. So it has been developed in that way. If you look at how much of space is provided around, then this hierarchy can be observed. And these are all within the neighborhood. The third is third kind of space extending from the family courtyard to this party would be to the neighborhood space, which I already talked about. Then the streets, the narrow street might come and meet the main crossing, which might be the node there, and in that node they might have some additional markers, like maybe a double leaf might be there, or a higher order temple might be put there, or a higher order image might be put there, which that image somehow is able to identify two clan groups, or more than one clan group at the same time can identify to that image, whereas the image in the neighborhood is just identified with just that one single clan group. So here, these number of nodes of this kind are linked together, and that might form a high street. That high street actually links these neighborhoods. So you go to these towns, you'll find a high street which kind of links all these 24 plazas or 24 nodes of these 24 tolls. So you can actually observe. And that high street might, meaning it's a street which is in which some second order festivals are held. So there might be a Bhimsen Jatra that will take place in the high street. So, but still it is not a national level thing. It is still just something that links all the neighborhoods together. And it can lead you, that high street can lead you to the market square, where there might be a still higher order symbol put in. So I like to think of a space like one clan unit, then that is the neighborhood. The crossing of two neighborhoods or four neighborhoods coming together, and then eight neighborhoods, then maybe 24 neighborhoods, and 24 neighborhoods come together, then it becomes a Darbar Square. When all the main streets meet, it's in the Darbar Square, and at the Market Square maybe it is 4 to 8 neighborhoods that interact. And these are all marked by various symbols. For example, if you look at different elements, like Pati, for example. Pati is a very small rest house there. Then you have another rest house called Chapa. And Chapa is at present it looks like a feasting house, but to me it seems like it might have been a larger socializing space, socializing building, like the Pati, but had some extended function. Then if you extend it further, you'll get a building like a space symbolized by a Sattal. Where the Sultan might be located, then you might go to a still larger space where a Kavach apart might be located. And this term was actually used to refer to some parties in the Darbar Square. So that was the Kavach, simply means large. So this was large group of more important people using it like that. And if you look at the water element, you can see the well, which is kind of a monocultural place. Because in Nepal, there was this water would be touchable and untouchable depending upon who touches it. So well was not a very satisfactory kind of a service outlet for a mixed community. So this was, the well was always put inside the neighborhood. So that's the same jal using it. So the water is not impure by touching. So it, stagnant water is okay there. But if you go to a place where several neighborhoods have to use the same water element, then it is a heating, and which is a flowing water. A flowing water meaning you can't, this is not stagnant. So it's any water that you touch is already gone. So it's not there. So you always have a fresh supply of pure water all the time. So the concept of purity has been used there. So likewise, you can take it to the pukhu and the ghat also. I thought, though I am not able to explain the pukhu position very well here, the ghat I can see is an extension in terms of, you know, the publicness of it. But with pohari I have a little problem in the sense that some of these are theoretical positions also. So some of them are related to observations in some particular places. So if you look at spaces itself, you can think of spaces in various order. They're like, basically you can see the open spaces are of two types in the whole city. One is what I call the monocultural space. Monocultural space being a space which is used by a particular clan, a group or a particular neighborhood, and it's usually a family and clan space, or the courtyard is a monocultural space of the first order, I would say. And then the pikhalapu or the point of departure, the first street. The first street that you meet is the, what I call the street of similar thoughts. So they are all from the same neighborhood coming out and going around the same stone, but they do not have conflicting thoughts in mind. So sometimes in urban areas the conflict in the minds are worse than physical conflicts on the street. So you can avoid the, you know, the crash of the cars, but the crash of the minds would be very difficult to avoid. And so I think they were probably arranging for that in some way. And so these pikhalapu or stones that kind of harmonize your movement becomes important. The second order monocultural space, again I already talked about well, pati. Maybe the second crossing, maybe the place where the chasa is located, the neighborhood square, the Ganesh around the neighborhood square, and maybe also a third crossing that goes beyond the neighborhood square. These will be all the kind of monocultural spaces like this. So this is a kind of a fruit recital that's taking place. I think the younger generation and the older generation are exchanging knowledge here. I'm not probably putting it in a real words of a cultural learner, but I'm just putting it as a way I see it, that that's how, you know, what they're doing. And then the other set of spaces are multicultural spaces. The first order multicultural space is where the crossing of four dissimilar thoughts, I mean the four neighborhoods coming together in a certain crossing, or at least more than two neighborhoods coming together, will lead to this kind of space there. So this is happening in the conduit pit in the Davali area and the plaza around it. Maybe second order multicultural space you can see in the market square and the high street. The third order might be, you can see it in the Darbar square, where all the 24 streams of thoughts converse there. And it's a large space. If you look at the Darbar square, it's a very large space. But that doesn't mean it is one space. It is actually a collection of sectioned spaces. So there are all these smaller spaces kind of created there. Whereas if you look at the market square, it is one unitary kind of a space there, like the space in front of Nathapala and the space in front of the Bhaktapur Darbar is different because these elements make it look different. So you have spaces like this. So this is our second order spaces. So you have this almost a multicultural space here in the Itumbahal. So you can see it's a Buddhist space, but it is from the religious point of view, it might be one religion being expressed there in terms of objects in the space, but actually in terms of its use, it is quite multi-religious in nature. And you can see the use of the religious elements is also not very, it's not always so strict. You can use it for whatever purpose you want to use while you socialize there. So that is part of the Avastha, which I think is the third order multicultural space. That's what happens if some jatras occur in Patandar Vaskar. and that is the Ghat, which is the third order space in terms of the water and detrites. So in terms of changes and challenges, which right in the beginning I thought it will go to the question hour, so it seems like it is gone to the question hour, but I just outlined the points, and I think one of the changes and the challenges, one is the challenge of the cyberspace itself, which has somehow become a real space for many of us, and how does a public space become important in that context. The growing indoor life in our society, at present I've told the Americans already spend 90% of their time indoors, and we all have that as a target in our lifestyle. So ultimately, what is the idea of having public space if you are going to have an indoor lifestyle? So this is a society which was very much oriented to outdoor community lifestyle, and the cyber lifestyle or the indoor lifestyle is probably going to really clash it. And at present, I think we still have a great problem with the heterogeneity, diversity, as well as density. You know, we have the multiplicity of ethnicities in Kathmandu last 10 years, maybe 120 ethnicities are all jamming together here, different cultures, different religions, and the diversity is so high that a study has shown that 75% of the migrants traversed medium to large social distances while they came to Kathmandu. So there is a lot of diversity between people, socio-economic diversity is there, and our density at present is 21,000 per persons per square kilometer, whereas just Tidimala was looking for a neighborhood of 2,000 persons. So this is obviously now at present some of our wards have a population of 100,000 and more. And in this situation, no new spaces have been built, maybe since 1760s. But one thing that has happened is all the traditional spaces have been kind of reduced, encroached upon. So, and we have also created many new settlements, many new housing areas which are actually socio-cultural deserts. So there is no question of studying socio-cultural spaces in some of the new spaces that we have built. And the problem of urban poverty and how it expresses in the public spaces is also there. That's a new change that's coming there. So you can see our urban spaces have been looking like this. This is a place called Thalmaru in Kathmandu. It was called Thalmaru because even in the old days, I suppose there was no space here. So at present, it has no space at all, you can see. So in the old days, they were managing this space in some way because they already know it was Thalmaru because most of the festivals had to be started here. I think it was named that way because of the Gaisagra festival, in which everyone has to go there and try to distribute their goodies to the passers-by. And that there is no more space, you have to queue up for it. So this, you can see things like this. This is supposed to be one of those high street doublies, and it has become a place for plastic shoes. And so it's not just the poor who are occupying it, it is also the government. You can see the institutions putting these huge black tanks all over. And of course everyone knows about the water shortage, but then these advertise the water shortage more than anything else, and they also kill the socio-cultural aspect of the space. You can see the motorbike there. So the other thing that is happening with us is the breakdown of the traditional organization of the Newars themselves. So this is not only the encroachment of all the in-migrants, new in-migrants, the recipient also has broken down. So there is a wanton commercialization happening all over, and I don't know what can be done in the case of the pace and scale of diversity that's happening. But if we give a more time for assimilation, I suppose there is a cultural process, or there is a cultural experience behind these towns that can come to the assistance of managing heterogeneities, diversities, as well as densities. Thank you.